Hi everybody, it's Mark John Deere again with the Ice Cream for the Soul Blood Talk Radio Show, and I'm pleased to have my guest Ellen Carver this week. And I've known Ellen Carver now, I met Ellen Carver when I first came across the three principles of understanding at a Jamie Smart event. And Ellen's got a lovely energy around her, and I'm sure you'll get a feel for that when I bring her on the air. She's one of the most happy, smiley people I know. So I'm looking forward to talking to Ellen, and Ellen's just recently written a book which has come out, so I'm sure we'll mention that, which is called Life Begins at 50. And, well, without further ado, I'll just bring Helen on. Hi, Ellen, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm fine, thank you.
You having a
good day? How
are you?
Pardon? I'm fine.
Great. So, well, Ellen, I think if you've heard some of my shows before, I always like to get a bit of background on people. I think it's always a bit, well, I said to you before I came on the air, I don't have a structure, but one of the things, I don't have a structure with the interviews, but one of the things I do tend to always do is ask people to give me a little of the background and how they've come to this point in life and what they've been up to and what understandings they've gained. So
yeah.
Would you mind telling us a little about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose my story, if you like, is that I separated my husband in my 30s, and I was then sort of juggling work with children for quite some time. I didn't actually get divorced till the age of about 49. And I was always, hilariously, I was always sort of thinking, oh, I don't want to get divorced yet, because it was almost like a comfort blanket to still be married somehow. You know, it's like, oh, I don't want to let go, because then what's going to happen? You know, the carpet's going to go from beneath my feet, and it's like, oh, I'll be on my own, you know. And yet when I did actually eventually get divorced, it was like, it's a bit like a feeling of liberation, really. And I thought, gosh, this is it. This is me. My children were grown up by that time, and it's like, right, what am I going to do for the rest of my life, really? And so at the age of 49, I started reading this brilliant book that almost subconsciously said to me, right, you know, you can do anything you want, actually. And I started thinking, oh, you know, having worked in a state agency for about the last 30 years, I suddenly thought, well, actually, I could rent my house out, I could go off travelling, I can do whatever I want. And then, of course, you start, you know, sort of talking yourself out of it, thinking, oh, Helen, come on, get real, you know, don't be daft, you know, you've got a mortgage, your job, security. And then I made the mistake of saying to my daughter, Rachel, who was 19 at the time, Rachel, if I said, you know, we could go off travelling around the world, what would you say? And she sort of went, yeah! And I thought, oh, my God, you know, started backpedalling, thinking, well, hang on, you know, let's not get carried away. This might be not such a good idea. And she said, Mum, you know, that would be fantastic. And I suddenly thought that Rachel was having a gap year. My oldest daughter, Nicola, was having her year sort of out from uni, doing her stint abroad because she was doing French and Spanish. And it was like perfect timing, really. And I had a conversation with a friend of mine, Jackie, and she said, Helen, we don't want to be having this conversation in 10 years' time where I say to you, oh, do you remember where you had that fantastic opportunity to go off around the world? And I thought, after that, it was a no-brainer, really. It was just sort of, I don't want to regret for the rest of my life thinking I had the opportunity and I just didn't go for it. So I then started saying publicly, I suppose, that, you know, oh, this is what I'm going to do. I you know, gave him my notice at my job. I started saying to people, oh, this is what I'm going to do. And suddenly it takes on a bit of a life of its own, really. Mm. And it's almost, when I look back, it was, when I was travelling, that was, I went off for 6 months, travelling around the world with Rachel. And, you know, I can't even put into words what an absolutely phenomenal time we had. Mainly the sort of the people that we met, who, even though I was, it was 2 weeks after my 50th birthday that we set off, and most of the people that I met when I was travelling were between the ages of about 18 and 25, I would say. And, but I would say without exception, everybody just treated me like another traveller, really, which was so refreshing, because when you're travelling, you're all of the same ilk. You're open to the conversation, friendship, having a laugh, having a few drinks, going on adventures, you know, it was just phenomenal. And the different cultures and the different scenery and the different countries, the different food, the whole the whole trip was just an absolute eye-opener for me, because before that, I would say, apart from Canada, I'd only ever been to Europe. And it was like opening this Pandora's box and knowing that life would never be the same again, really. And what I sort of intended to do in writing the book that I wrote about our travels in a very humorous way is to sort of inspire people to think that actually this is life. You know, we only get one life. This is not a rehearsal. And here's me, who's just a very ordinary person who decided to really get out of that hamster in the wheel scenario of doing the same old, same old, same old thing day after day, thinking that I had no other options, really. And actually taking that leap of faith and going off and doing something completely different, but knowing inside me that it was completely the right thing to do. Even though to other people it sort of probably seemed completely illogical and completely scary and like, oh my God, what is she doing? To me, there was just something inside me that said, no, actually, this is completely the right thing to do. And honestly, I just had an absolute ball. It was like going off and sort of playing for 6 months. And I think the thing that it taught me at that time and since then is that really, that is how we should live our lives. You know, we end up, a lot of people end up living their lives as if it's this thing to be endured and you've got to take it seriously. And I used to always think that, you know, if you didn't really work hard for something and have the discipline and the structure and the plan, then obviously you weren't doing it right and you didn't deserve to sort of, you know, get money at the end of it or whatever, because no, you know, you hadn't sort of done the dirty work beforehand, you know. But now I think, gosh, you know, we're put on this earth to have fun, to be happy, to actually revel in the fact that we're having fun and living a joyous life, if you like, really. And if you can sort of inspire other people to think the same way, then oh, hallelujah, you know.
Well, I can relate so much to what you're saying, because I was a bit younger than you when I set off traveling, but it was a similar kind of thing. I got divorced. I had a very short marriage, and I got divorced, and then I just suddenly I'd always had a bit of wanderlust as being a teenager, and then I found myself at 25. Like I said, I got married very young, and it was it didn't last very long. And I found myself at 25, and it felt like my world had come to an end. You know, I didn't particularly want the divorce, what I found myself in, and all this and the other. And then I just suddenly had the realization, oh, I can do whatever I want now after being such a young man with a lot of responsibility. And then suddenly I found myself free again. And I can totally relate, because I set off on my travel, bought a big motorbike and set off and just headed south. And many of my friends were going, oh, you're crazy. And I'm thinking, and they were a similar age to me at the time. And some of them were saying to me, oh, I wish I could do what you're doing. And none of them, and some of the people who were saying that, I'd know they didn't have mortgages, they didn't have any particular ties. But we get so conditioned, don't we, into fitting into the system, into what, we're all doing like robots, you know, the go to work, pay the bills, get a mortgage. Yeah. So yeah, it's a wonderful.
I think it's also the flip side from you know, getting divorced after being separated for so long was very much like taking the scab off an old wound for me. It was very painful. It was almost like being pitted against somebody who was my best friend and lover, and it was like, oh my goodness, you know, I can't believe that this is all happening. And it was a horrible, horrible time. But once you come out of that and you sort of see the light at the end of the tunnel, it's like the flip side. You think, right, I've been through that. I'm not doing that anymore. Now what? You know, I actually want to go out and I want to have some fun. And I think because I'm in my mid-50s now, but it's almost like I see people around me who complain about their jobs, their relationships, life, and it goes on for years. But unfortunately, they can't see that they can do something about it. And I look back at my own life and I think, gosh, I could have still been in that job like a hamster on a wheel, you know, having 4 weeks holiday a year and thinking, oh, you know, I've got to take them off at Christmas and I've got 2 weeks in the summer and, you know. And it's like that the rest of your life is just like same old, same old, same old. You know, seeing the same people and doing the same things and never veering off the sort of the path, really. And now I think, God, I want spontaneity. I want to sort of go with the flow. I want to just sort of explore life. And I think because I'm now 55, you know, over the last couple of years, I've been to far too many funerals of people who are in their 40s, 50s and 60s. And to me, that completely puts life into perspective. You know, this is not a rehearsal. You know, if you don't enjoy life and you don't actually make it a sort of a really happy, happy existence, then one day you're not going to be around to sort of say, oh, no, actually, if I'd known I was going to die now, oh, I would have done things very differently. Well, no, this is it, you know. You know, it's not a rehearsal. It's for living. And a bit like you said, when your friends were 25 and saying, oh, I couldn't do that, it's like, gosh, you know, you've got your whole life ahead of you, haven't you, really? And I would say that I was always very much a perfectionist when I was younger, you know, and I always did the right thing, what I ought to and I should do and I must do. You know, it was like, looking back, thinking, gosh, it was almost like I was the perfect wife, the perfect daughter, the perfect mother, you know what I mean? And then it was like I was breaking out saying, why? I'm off, you know? I do think that funerals to me definitely put life into perspective, and I just think, gosh, this is just another reminder to me that, you know, you've got to get out there and live your life. And also that thing of people often blame other people, don't they? Sort of, they blame people in the past for the fact that they can't live the life they want now, and it's, if so-and-so didn't do that to me, then I wouldn't be doing this, and if so-and-so hadn't said that about me, then I wouldn't be like this. No. We're all responsible for our own happiness, and the past, it's gone. It's a memory. It's like, you know, nobody's lived a perfect life, have they? You know, we've all had our trials and tribulations and tragedies and everything else, but it's not particularly what happens to you. It's the way that you deal with it, really. And I think you've got to sort of, you know, have that period of grieving or whatever, and then it's like, right, okay, come on, we're off again, you know? Time to have some fun.
Yeah. I'm just curious because, like I say, there's many people out there, for example, and I was one of them, which when, like I say, it doesn't really matter what age you are. If you go through a rough period, say it's divorce or redundancy or anything like that, and people find themselves caught in a rut, what would you say to them then if they're feeling... just at a loose end, at a loss, because many of us do that, and sometimes we're so stuck in our thinking that, oh, this is it, this is my lot, like you said, so many people, and it's part of the conditioning, you know, when people think about selling their house or, I don't want to encourage people to do things irresponsible, like walking away from the mortgage, but people sometimes do that, they get to a point and they think, oh, bollocks to this, I'm off. Basically just shut the door. But I'm just curious, what would you say to somebody who's perhaps is perhaps coming up to 50, finding themselves on the going through a crappy time, whether it's divorce or redundancy, and feeling like, oh well, this is it, this is my lot in life. What would you say to them? And I think you've already covered some of it already, but
yeah, but I think for my mind and with my sort of life experience, I've realised that it's when you're in a happy state of mind, when you're feeling happy in your own skin, even if it's just walking the dog, it's not like you have to go travelling to do that. It's not like you have to, you know, particularly go on holiday to do that. But if you're just doing something like you're walking the dog, you're in a place where you actually just go off and you've got nothing on your mind, that's when you should make decisions. That's when you should think, actually, what do I really want to do with the rest of my life? You know, is this for me? Is it not? And it's almost like we're always listening to this great big sort of brass band in our head that's going, yeah, well, this is what you should do and da-da-da. But it's almost like getting into a great state of mind and listening to the little flute in the background that says, you thought of this one. And unfortunately, that's the one that we often ignore. And it's just like, as soon as I've been in the shower, you know, I've been cleaning my teeth and something just pops into my mind. I think, God, I never thought of that. And it's almost like, I know with the three principles, it's all very well saying to people, you're always feeling, you're thinking, what have you. But it's almost like it's easier to know when you're not doing the right thing than when you are. And the fact that if you're all knotted and you're stressed and you're going around like a headless chicken and you really can't think because you've got so many thoughts swirling around your head, that's not the time to make a decision. That's the easiest way of not doing it, if you like. Whereas actually, when you're just chilling with friends, you're going for a walk with a dog, you're doing something that just actually makes you feel good, that's when things come to you, and that's when you should just explore those things and think, actually, okay, you know, some things popped up like a little light bulb in my mind. Maybe I'll have a look at that. Maybe I'll explore that. And if it feels right, it's almost like things start happening to make you realise that, oh, maybe this could be a possibility. I mean, one of the examples is when I was when I decided to go off travelling, I wanted to rent my house out for 6 months. One for the security and two because obviously it was going to fund some of the trip. And I put it with my local property management agency. I didn't get much in the way of viewings and what have you. And then a week before I was going away, one of my best friends said, right, Helen, my boyfriend sold our house. We were really looking for something that was unfurnished, but we decided we do want to rent your house out. And I just thought, yes! It's like the universe conspires to make it work if it's meant to. And it was perfect. You know, they moved in about the day after we went off. They rented it for 6 months. We came back after 6 months. So when we came back, the house was empty again. And it was just like, oh, thank you, universe. You've sorted it for me, you know. It's almost like if you set off on a track, you know instinctively whether it's right or not, because it either feels good or you're thinking, oh, you know, no, this doesn't feel right or whatever. And I think the biggest thing to my mind for people not doing what they want is they set off on a course and they think it's set in concrete. Well, it's not, is it? You know, no. You can sort of set off on a plane journey and then it diverts and it recalibrates and you think, oh, this isn't working, so I'll try that. And it's about giving it a go. It's about having a go rather than just staying in the same old, and never trying anything because you find it won't work out.
Mm.
And with the three...
Yeah, I think...
Sorry, go on.
Sorry. I always have this trouble. There's always a bit of a delay on the call. No, there was so much in that that I could talk to as well. And I agreed with you. Some of my memories are coming back now. It came to mind about what you were saying about being quiet and making decisions when you're quiet rather than just setting off in going travelling when you're not really sure about things, for example. I remember I was feeling quite sorry for myself when I first got divorced, and I was speaking to my mum and her husband, and I said to them, and I was in such a fed up, depressed place, and like I say, I'd always fancied going to America, and I'd never been to America at the time. And I remember saying to I was talking to my mum's husband about it, and he'd been to the States a few times. I said, oh, I really want to go. And he said, in fairness to him, with his wisdom, he said, I wouldn't go now because you'll be taking yourself with you and you won't enjoy it. And he saw I was in such a low space, and it would have been true. I would have gone and I would have just took all my troubles with me, you know, so I wouldn't have enjoyed the trip. So I think there is that thing about giving yourself space to, and for some people it takes longer than others, but I think I also think it's good to point out that it's, for example, if you are setting out on a journey of whatever kind to try and make yourself happy, then you're going to become unstuck because, well, I think you more or less pointed to this already, you've got to find that joy within you first and then do what you want to do from there rather than looking for things to give you the joy, haven't you?
Yeah, and I mean it can work the other way as well. You know, if somebody was thinking, oh, I'm really fed up, and they book a cheap weekend to Italy or Paris or whatever, it can put you in a different frame of mind, so you then think, oh, now I've got time to think about that. So you can do that as well, you know, but you don't want to sort of organize a very expensive trip, you know, and quit your job and do everything like that just because you want to feel better. Because sometimes, you know, that might not be the right thing to do. You've got to be you can't be daft about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes, you know, things tend to sort of pan out, but you do have to think about the practicalities as well. And that's why I wanted to rent my house out, you know, it's funded some of the trip. So, yeah, you've got to look at all sorts. But, I mean, nowadays, you see, there's so many more options, isn't there? You know, from a travel point of view, people can retire early. They can take a sabbatical if they work for the local authorities and they've got someone that can fill in for them for 6 months. You can work abroad. You can decide to set up a business and work from abroad, you know, and just use your laptop to do it. There's just so many other ways of working at the same time as you wanted to nowadays. So it's not such a big leap of faith if you think, well, okay, you know, say you're a writer, you know, and you you do copyright or you write books or whatever. You can do that from anywhere in the world, can't you? You know, the internet is phenomenal in the fact that you can actually do anything from anywhere in the world in a lot of instances work-wise. It just depends what you're working in and whether that's, you know, feasible or not, really. But to me, going travelling, it altered my whole perspective on life, really. And I would say from Rachel's point of view, Rachel, I would say before we set off, everybody would have thought that she was quite cocky and confident and what have you. But Rachel used to say things like, oh, Mum, if we go on holiday, can we go for a week rather than 2 weeks, otherwise I'm going to get homesick. And I used to think, oh, for goodness sake, you know. Going travelling, it just almost like made her grow up overnight, really. You know, she then decided she wanted to go to university. She realised that you can talk to anybody from any walks of life. You can, you know, she's very pernickety about food. Suddenly she was eating, you know, anything and everything. It does just give you that different perspective on life. And I feel as if I've lived my life backwards, really, because when I was in my 20s, people didn't go off travelling. You know, you just sort of basically left school, did your A-levels, got a job, and off you went. Or you did that, you went to university and you got a job. Whereas nowadays, it's much more commonplace. But for my age group, in those days, no. And so it definitely was that sort of, if I don't do it now, I can't think I'll ever do it, really.
Yeah, yeah. And like I say, obviously, it sounds like you had a fantastic time.
I just
want to go back to, it's funny as you're speaking, some of my memories are coming back to mind when I set off travelling, and you said something about it seems like the universe conspires to help you. And I remember I had very little money really to set off, so it was a case of I knew I was going to have to work when I set off, so it was like kind of like a working travelling holiday. But I still needed finances, like say to just basic things. And I had a little business. I had a little business at the time, and I was trying to sell this little business that I had, and it was all very last minute, and it just didn't seem like it was going to go. And it was worth quite a lot of money, really, on paper, because it was like an established business, but it wasn't with premises. It was just like the clientele I built. And then at the last minute, I managed to sell it for a few thousand pounds, which really helped. But it was like literally 2 or 3 days before we set off.
Yeah.
So that really, yeah, and it was just so incredible how it seemed to happen out of nowhere. Suddenly this guy phoned me up and said, oh, I heard from a friend of a friend of a friend. So, yeah, and some people could say that's just coincidence, but I think I'm more and more open-minded on those fronts nowadays.
yeah. I mean, another example is I organised a party to sort of advertise the fact that my book was out, but also to make some money for Pencils of Promise, which is a charity that I just think is phenomenal, in October last year. And looking back, I think, gosh, it was quite a gamble, really, you know, because you're outlaying all this money for a marquee, for a disco, for food and what have you. But it was almost like once I decided to get the momentum to get it going and I sent the invitations out, the party was on the Saturday. I knew that I had auction prizes, but on the Wednesday, I decided, well, actually, I've got this sort of captive audience. I might as well go and get some raffle prizes as well. So I went into my local town and I actually went round all the different independent companies and shops and just said, look, you know, have you got anything that you would let me raffle? And honestly, people were so generous, I was completely bowled over, really. And on the night, 100 people came and we made £2,500 for charity. And I thought, gosh, you know, if I'd played safe and I'd thought, you know, I can't really do this. And people would say to me, oh, I think you left it a bit last minute, Helen, you know. I said, but I had to know that my book was out and available, you know, to give to people if I wanted. So I only had about 5 or 6 weeks to organise it. But, you know, it was, it's like if you do something with a sort of like good intention and, you know, it's a force for good, then things do tend to just pan out somehow. And, and people were saying, oh, what a brilliant night. Well, you'll have to do another one. I thought, ooh, stranger things have happened. life's a learning curve, isn't it, really? You know, you learn these things as you go along, and I don't think it's any coincidence that people in their 40s and 50s suddenly start looking for something different, really. Because I think, you know, when you're in your early 20s and 30s, you just go along in life, and you're trying to figure it out. But I think by the time you've got to your 40s and 50s, you're sort of, you've had a few knocks and a few bumps and what have you, and sometimes if you have a really bad knock, it makes you think, gosh, what else is out there, you know? What the universe is all about, really, you know?
Yeah, there's more to life than just being on the treadmill, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm curious, I've never actually asked you this before, Ellen. So after you came back from your travels, then you came across the three principle understanding. I was just curious how that happened. How did that come up into your life?
Well, again, another little coincidence. I'd done NLP, neurolinguistic programming, years before. I'd always dipped my toe in the water with lots of complementary therapies. I did kinesiology, Reiki, NLP, and the whole caboodle. And this lady that I met on an NLP course years before got in touch with me about a year afterwards and said, oh, I'm just on my way to see Jamie Smart at this NLP conference. He's the new big thing in NLP. And it's not that I even kept in touch with her. It was like a very fleeting conversation, but something obviously stuck in my mind about Jamie Smart, really. So when I came back, I had about 2 weeks of euphoria, you know, where people are saying, where do you go? What do you do? And Rachel would sort of roll her eyes and say, oh, my God, she's not going to tell me the story again, you know. And then I thought, right, what am I going to do in my life, you know? I thought, right, I'm going to start writing a book, which was something I'd never, ever done before, but it just sort of just seemed so logical to me to think, well, I've got this diary that I kept, I've got these emails. Okay, I think I've got a basis for a book. So I started writing, started sort of bashing it out, if you like. And then I thought, right, I need to invest in sort of a career or, a, you know, something like that, you know, rather than doing these complementary therapies as a bit of a hobby, maybe I need to look at it, you know, as a career. So I rang up Jamie Smart. I had a look at his website and I thought, actually, this really resonates with me. This looks great. It's as if they're actually applying, you know, NLP to real life rather than just teaching it, really. So I rang up Jamie and I said, oh, you know, can I do some NLP courses? I said, I'd like to do, you know, the first and second is revision, and the third one, the trainer training, is, you know, to go out into the world. And he said, yeah, I'll give you a good discount if you go, da da. So I thought, right. So I would think that was the first year, really. I was writing my book, I was doing training, and then he sort of just slipped into the three principles, and I just thought, this is just so logical to me. Again, it just felt right. It just seemed like the logical way forward. So I followed him into doing the three principles, and I absolutely loved it. And I thought, gosh, this just knocks everything else out of the water, really. And then I gradually got some money from my divorce and I started investing in property to give me a rental income, to basically give me the freedom to make more choices, really, rather than thinking, right, you know, I've got to do this because I need the money. It was more like, you know, this is great. I'm getting some income and now I have the wherewithal to think about what I really want to do.
Right, fantastic. And so what is it, I'm sure people might be curious now, so what is it you do now, Ellen?
My book came out in August, and I've been promoting my book, and now I'm creating a business based on Life Begins at 50, which you can look at on www.lifebeginsat50.info, and it's about sort of taking people through experiences so that they just have that feel-good factor. And it gives them that confidence to think, gosh, yeah, you know, I do feel differently, and if I've done that, then maybe now I'll do something else. It's also in the melting pot, really. I keep getting different ideas as to what I want to do, but one of my ideas is to take people on a trip abroad, probably to Asia, an overland trip, and say, right, well, if you want to dip your toe in the water with world travel, this will give you an idea of what it's like. There's lots of other things that I've thought about, like doing adventure trips in the Lake District for a day, motorbikes, sort of being a million passenger, to just give you that absolute exhilaration and freedom of going off at the Yorkshire Dales or the Lake District. I even spoke to your partner, Sheila, about doing like the real Spain over in Spain and showing people, you know, what the real Spain is all about rather than the touristy bit. I'm just really putting that all together at the moment and seeing what it is that people really do want to do. Whether that be even to take them to, say, rock concerts or just get people together for, you know, for lunch now and again and say, right, let's just sort of get together and, you know, create some sort of a network, really. So, yeah, it's all in the melting pot at the moment, really.
But it sounds like you've still got your passion very much in the travel.
Definitely got the travel bug. And also, with the travel bug, I mean, last January, I got a phone call from she's not a friend, actually. She was like an acquaintance, really, who knew a friend of mine, saying, Helen, you know, I'm going skiing. My friend can't come. Would you like to come? And I said, egosh, you know, I haven't been skiing for 25 years. I don't think it's really my thing. And she said, oh, well, you know, I'm thinking about it. And so basically, about 2 days to go, I thought, you know, why not? That'd be fun. So I went off skiing and had the most hilarious time. The first day, I went sort of snow ploughing around these mountains for about 3 hours and thought, gosh, you know. I then got to this point where I saw them all going over the cliff, like lemmings on a suicide mission, and I thought, ooh, I think this is a bit much for me. So I clicked my skis off and started sliding down on my bottom. And this Austrian guy came along and sort of went, huh, are you hurt? And I said, no, it's just a bit steep for me, actually. And so he sent off a skidoo, which was like the little scooter that comes across the mountain to come and rescue me. I thought, oh, thank God. And then, which, you know, it was just, and I thought, gosh, Alan, what are you doing here? You know, but it was fun, you know. And then the next day I had an actual ski lesson. I thought, gosh, this is what it's all about. I had no idea. You had to sort of go across the slopes, you know, and what have you.
You're just trying to go straight down, were you?
No ploughing. Straight down, you know. And she would say, right, we're turning now, you know. And I'd say, Vanessa, turning, you know. And then we went bobsleighing down the Olympic bobsleigh run. Honestly, crazy. But we, in a way, things always happen for a reason. You know, from that moment on, I then got to know Vanessa. You know, I'd only met about four times before I went on the skiing holiday. And now, she's a lovely friend. You know, and also that spontaneity. I love doing things spontaneity. It was just great. We had the time of our lives, and I just had a ball. And this new year, I thought, you know, I think it's going to be fairly quiet and what have you. And then I got a WhatsApp from a friend who was over in South Africa seeing her son and her cousin. She said, Helen, you know, you'd love it. We're going to do something on New Year's Eve, come over. And so I started looking at flights. That was on a Saturday. I thought, I'll look at the flights. And I thought, actually, these are quite reasonable. And I knew that we were going to stay with her cousin for a week, which would make the trip a lot cheaper than it otherwise would be. And so on the Tuesday morning at 6 o'clock, off I went on the 30th of January and spent New Year's Eve, my birthday, over in South Africa. And wow. Things like that, you know, I just think, well, why not?
spontaneity is something that a lot of us seem to have gotten out of, doesn't it? As children, we seem to be quite easy to be, it's easy to be spontaneous. We're playing with one toy and then throw it to one side and get on with another one. But, I think there's a lot to be said for spontaneity.
Yeah, and also I think I've learned in life as well that it's not just about making money. It's like, you know, I had to go over to, I was asked to go to do some public speaking at a do yesterday. And one, this lady, her first words were, do you know such and such and such and such? It was my sister and her husband. And I said, good grief, what a small world. We said, well, I live in Richmond in North Yorkshire. And fact is, I would say that I sort of covered my expenses. But what I got out of the day was I met loads of people. I met someone who said, gosh, you know, I've got this business online. Maybe we could do something together. I looked at this lady's sort of business model and thought, gosh, that is a great business model. And I think it's something that, you know, I wasn't going to replicate, but I could replicate in my own way, doing different things. And I came away and thought, gosh, you know, you, in life, you sort of join the dots going backwards. You know, you can't understand going forwards why you meet these people and what the situations are. But looking back, you think, gosh, yes, you know, I met that person for a reason. And now we're doing so-and-so. And, yeah, and I love all that because I love meeting people, actually. I can never understand how people say, well, I don't want to go to that party because I don't know anybody. I think, gosh, how are you going to meet anybody new?
Yeah. I think it's coming up for me now in Lockton. A lot of people, they want to know all the steps to where they're going to go to, or if they've got a goal in mind, they want to know every single step beforehand. And if they're missing one step out of their plan, they don't take one step. And I think you said it. I think what you said it earlier on was sometimes you might set off somewhere, but your journey can totally deviate, but you'll still have a great time along the way.
Yeah.
And that's how it was for me when I live in Spain now, and I didn't, the last place I expected to live in was Spain. But
yeah.
I didn't even want to stop in the town that I stopped in, but I was with a girlfriend at the time and she wanted to stop in the infamous Benidorm, and I ended up working in Benidorm. I had a great time for like 3 years, and it would have been, if you'd have asked me beforehand, I would have said, oh, I'm not going to bloody Benidorm. So yeah, I think it's just sometimes it's just making a move. Otherwise you just get, everything, life just can get stagnant, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. My children are always nagging at me to get a dog. And I say, no. I said, actually, for the first time in 20 years, I'm children free and dog free. And I want to just actually go off and do what I want to do at the top of a hat, and not think, oh, I've got to be back for a dog.
Yeah.
And what we do, which is brilliant, actually, is we adopt dogs. You know what I mean? When the kids' friends or my friends are going away for 2 weeks, we say, we'll have a dog. And it's lovely because, you know, you get to have dogs, but you don't have that responsibility for the next 15 years. And it's not that I do love them. I just don't want the tie of having to be back every night at 5 o'clock to make sure, you know, the dog's all right. Because I just want the freedom now to actually live and go off and do madcap things. And I was thinking when I was talking to you earlier, Mark, you know, with my business, I suppose it's the fact that now I've got my website, lifebeginsatpeter.info, and I just want to put things up there to say, right, we're doing a workshop, or right, I'm going to do something in Spain with Sheila, or right, I'm going to go over and work with Angie in Australia and we're going to put a workshop on, or, you know, Angie's coming to Thailand, we're going to meet up there, who fancies coming? Because to me, I think that's more how I want to be now. I want to just think, right, I'll try this. If it works and people come and that's a great success, then I'll do it again. If not, then you think, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Okay, we'll try something else.
And
that sounds quite exciting to me, really,
you know? Yeah, and invariably you learn from, even if things don't go well, for example, on a little project they might do, you always, I think people forget this, you always learn from whatever you do, don't you? It helps you in your next thing that you do. Like I say, so many of us, and I've been as guilty, and still can be in some ways, I'm a bit of a bit of a scaredy cat in some ways in making big decisions. But it's usually out of the blue that I end up making decisions, like you, it sounds like you did with your travelling, and then people say to you, oh, how did you do that? But I think we all do it in different ways.
Yeah.
But sometimes we get caught up in that fear, don't we, of, who am I to go travelling around the world, or who am I to set up my own little business, or nobody will come. But it's playing, like you say, playing, I think, is...
Yeah.
Is a phrase you used a lot at the beginning of the call, and I think the way society in many ways is set up, it seems to be very little room for that. It seems to be the only time you play in many ways is when, and it's not really even play, it's like the culture of going to the bar or to the pub, and not that there's anything wrong with that. I quite enjoy going to the pub. But I think, yeah, it's good to step out of the comfort zone, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is. Yes, it is. And it's sort of, I remember maybe Richard Branson saying that you don't actually learn anything through things going to plan. You learn through failure, you know, because you realise what you've done wrong, so you do it differently next time. And I remember thinking with my party at the beginning of October, I remember thinking, gosh, this had a different feeling to me, in the fact that because I knew that I had the financial outlay, it was like, right, I've got to make this work, because I don't want to lose money. I don't want to just even break even. I want to make some money for this charity. And so that really does give you that sort of wherewithal to think, gosh, I've got to get people here, you know? I've got to, and also, you've got to make sure they enjoy the night, because they want to come back to another one. And that really did teach me a lot, really. It's like the conviction that, you've got to make it work and it's going to be great, you know?
Yeah. I'm just reminded again, it's like when you really set your stall out to you make the decision, for example, to go travelling or doing your business or whatever it is, you find reserves you have within you that you didn't know you had. I know, just something again, it's really interesting, it's just coming up to my mind. Like I say, I set off with very little money when I was travelling, and I got to Spain. And people probably who've been to Spain or some of these tourist resorts, they know them irritating people that follow you around and give you tickets trying to get you into the local bars. Well, I did that when I first got here, and I was such a shy person. Even as a young man, I was quite shy. I'm not a person who would talk to just anybody, but I was so determined not to end up going back with my tail between my legs back to the UK. Well, because a lot of my friends had said, oh, you'll be back in 2 weeks, you'll be back in 2 weeks. And I was so determined that that wouldn't happen, that I was literally would have done anything, you know. And it was things I wouldn't have dreamed of doing in the UK. I was perfectly up for having a go out here. So,
tell me about it. When were you in New Zealand?
I'm sure you had plenty of tales like that in your book.
New Zealand is the adventure capital of the world, and it really is. I mean, we were on the Kiwi Experience bus for 3.5 weeks. Yeah. So it was me and about 50, 18 to 25-year-olds, basically, which was just hilarious. But what they do is they send a clipboard round, because you have a driver guide, and they sort of give you the commentary, and they send a clipboard round saying, you know, tick these things if you want to do them. And there was things like, you know, the Maori village evening, and then it was like white water rafting over a 7-metre waterfall. And, you know, you think, oh, why not? You know, we'll tick them off. We can't be a party pooper. And then you're suddenly pulling up at, you know, Hell's Gate whitewater rafting, thinking, oh, my God. So we went whitewater rafting over 7-metre waterfall. And
where was that again? Sorry, Ellen. Where was that?
That was in New Zealand.
All right, lovely.
And, you know, it was. I mean, you know, the whitewater rafting, people go on about whitewater rafting. I thought, gosh, the whitewater rafting was fine. But, you know, sort of, you know, launching yourself over the waterfall, it's like, woo-hoo! And then after all that, you just think, oh, you know, fantastic. You know, we're still here. We're still in the boat. We're still alive. And then this great big sort of crocodile Dundee lookalike with a warped sense of humour says, right, I want you all to plop into the water. And he looked at me and he said, you, mother, you don't have to if you don't want to. And I said, oh, stop treating me like a geriatric. So I got into the water. And then he think, oh, no. Because he starts cackling like an old, you know, fishwife, and said, right, this is the gullible backpackers whitewater rafting. And suddenly you're floating along on your back. And before you know it, you're under the rapids, you're coughing, you're spluttering, your arms and legs are flailing. And you didn't even know that you were going there. So, you know, it sort of comes and takes you completely unaware. And and next thing, you know, having survived this sort of, I'm floating along again, and Jeremy was our guide. He started shouting, you know, stand up, mama. And I was just sort of in a little planet, you know, because I was just sort of, I'd come through this rapid, and suddenly I was like, you know, in a bit of a reverie. And he started shouting, you know, because he was apoplectic, you know. So eventually, gathered myself together, tried to stand up, kept sort of swaying back down with the current, and eventually sort of put my head down and sort of dragged myself back to this dinghy. And he said, we said, oh, you know, how did you do? And he said, you did good, you did good. He said, you didn't go anywhere any further down. He said, there's not many survivors over that next waterfall. You think, oh! Hey! And then we went skydiving at 15,000 feet, and on the way up, they start at 12,000 feet, they start putting oxygen masks on you. And I was thinking, nobody told me about this bit. And you sort of harness with your skydiver, and then there's a video camera woman sort of opposite you in this little plane, and you just sort of bunch along and bunch along until you get to the, you know, this open hatch, really. And Rachel was first, and I remember thinking, she's looking at that, she's about to wet herself, really, you know. And I thought, no, I think we're all about to wet ourselves, you know. But Rachel said to me before we set off, she said, Mum, how come you're so calm? And I said, well, to be honest, Rachel, after the whitewater rafting, it's almost like bring it on, really. It's just, you know, it just, once you've survived something like that and you've been absolutely petrified, it does give you that feeling of invincibility. You know, it gives you that confidence. It gives you that different mindset. You just think, well, actually, bring it on now. You know, come on, I'm ready for anything. And in a way, that's what I want to do in my business, is to inspire people to think, well, if you just do something that's a little bit out of your comfort zone, whether that be meeting other people, whether that be going internet dating, whatever, it, you know, once you've done one thing and you realise you can do it, you're off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You really are off. I mean, I suppose... one of the other things that we did was we met up with Sarah, who's a friend from over here, and she met and married her husband, you know, years ago when she was travelling around New Zealand, and she's been there for over 20 years, and she said, oh, you've got to do the waterfall challenge. And I said, oh, I've heard about this, Sarah. I said, we have to jump off a waterfall. She said, yeah. So off we went, you know, and you get to this great big waterfall. It was called Craps Waterfall, which I thought was quite apt. And, you know, her son was sort of doing handstands and then jumping off. Rachel, you know, sort of after a few jumped off. Then I was thinking, oh, gosh. So after a few minutes of walking up and down, I thought, right, Helen, this is it, just do it. So I jumped off, got a massive great wedgie when I hit the cold freezing water, and thought, oh! And then realised we had to sort of almost like abseil back up this rock, this knotted, slippery rock, to get back up to where we were. And I thought, gosh, that's the hardest part, really. But that was it. The next day, she said, right, you need to do waterfall challenge number two. And I said, oh, you know, what do you mean? Yeah, you've got to go and pose naked in front of one. You didn't mention that earlier, Sarah. She said, yes, we've got all the photos on our toilet wall. You know, this is sort of, you know, what you have to do in New Zealand. So off we traced to this clearing. Honestly. Thinking, you know, I hope Jeremy Beadle isn't somewhere around the corner just sort of going, got you. And, but there again, it's sort of, to me, if the worst thing you can do is make a fool of yourself, then why not have a go? You know, at the end of the day, a body's a body, isn't it? You know, we've all got one. And yeah, so we set the camera up, you know, and we were there like sort of, I don't know, I'm trying to think what we were like. We were sort of, you know, had arms and legs over the appropriate places, but there we were, you know, stark naked in front of this waterfall taking pictures. So, yeah. And Sarah keeps saying, why haven't you sent the photos? I said, because I think the men in white coats might come and take me away if I send them to you.
Yeah. So I'm guessing all this stuff is in your book, isn't it, Ellen?
It is, actually, it is.
Yeah. I'm sure that you're going to inspire people to, I'm sure there'll be people on this who will want to get your book. Where is your book available? Is it available on Amazon?
Yeah, and it's called Life Begins at 50 because... it was 2 weeks after my 50th birthday that I went off, and I thought, well, that's really quite appropriate, really, because my life has been completely and utterly different since the age of 50, to be honest.
Right. Well, I think, well, just having you on the show, I think you're inspiring people to who are perhaps in a rut to get up and do something, even if, like, say, it's taking those initial momentum steps just to get themselves going.
Yeah.
So
I hope so. That is the whole purpose of it, really.
Sorry, Ellen.
I just want people to realise that, you know, if I can do it, anybody can. You know, I'm a very ordinary person who just decided to get out of the rat race and do something different. And it is such a tragedy if people don't live the lives they want to just because they daren't. You know, because it frightens me to think that I could have still been in the same situation, really. You know, that I could still be working the job I'd done for years and still in that hamster wheel, having those 4 weeks holiday and thinking that was all that was available to me. No, yeah. It's not. It really is not.
And it's not an age thing either, is it? It can be youngsters can get caught up in this kind of those kind of little mind traps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people of my era who it's almost like they're waiting for the pension to kick in before they start living their lives. And I know and then they think something.
So many people don't make it, do they?
It's going to flick, and they're suddenly going to oh. And I remember going to a conference years ago. And this guy saying, why is it that people wait until they're terminally ill before they actually start living the lives they really want to? And I can completely resonate with that. You know, it's almost like when you're terminally ill, life becomes very sharply into perspective that, you know, that one day we're going to die. And it's just being brought forward, really. And suddenly you think, gosh, I want to do all the things that I want to do. But why don't we think that way now? Because we're not going to be alive forever. And we don't know what's going to happen in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And so you really do have to enjoy it. And I mean, I met a lady, Zumba, that I hadn't seen for a while. And she said to me, oh, well, Helen, you know, your book's out and dad's died. She said, gosh, you know, and I don't do a lot with my life. I just go to Dubai to see my son and I go down to London to see my children. And I said, yes, but Andrew, you're happy with that. And I said, that's different. If you're happy with that, that's absolutely fabulous. You know, most people, that is what that's their aspiration, isn't it, to be happy. So if actually you're happy with your life, there's nothing wrong with that at all. It's more the fact that people who are unhappy do nothing about it that I think is a real tragedy.
I agree with you totally. Like I say, it's like I say, if people are happy, we'll just do the simple life, and that's fine. But if people are thinking, oh, there's more, but they've not got that drive to come out of this comfort zone. Well, I think we'll have to pick your book up then. Give your book another plug. So, Ellen, well, it's we've been on that almost an hour. I'll let you go in a moment. But I guess you'd be open for people to getting in touch with you from the energy you've been coming from. I'm sure you'll be open to that. So if people wanted to get in touch with you, how could they get in? Could you give your email address?
Contact Helen on lifebeginsat50.info. That's probably the easiest way to contact me. And
say that again, and the line went a bit funny then.
Okay, it's www.lifebeginsat50.info, and there's a Contact Helen tab on there. Just send me an email, and I'll certainly get back to you. And, you know, if you want to buy my book, it's on Amazon. But, no, I'm very, very happy to have anybody contact me. I'd love to chat.
Great. Thanks very much. Well, thanks for coming on, Ellen. It's been great chatting to you. Now, hopefully I'll see you soon, either in Spain or over in the UK at some, maybe one of your events. You never know with the stuff you're going to get going.
Thank you. Yeah, that's lovely.
All right. Well, just stay on the air. I always forget. Just stay on the air after you finish the call, and I'll have a quick word with you.
Okay.
Thanks everybody for tuning in. And if anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can get in touch with me at icecreamforthesoul@hotmail.com. And as always, the four's the number four. Just a reminder that we've got the Jack Pransky trekking event coming up here in Spain. And similar to what ideas Ellen's got going on, I've got trekking events going on here in Spain. There's going to be more and more of those. Going to be doing either one-to-ones or group treks up into the mountains. So if that sounds like something that I float you about, just give me a shout. So thanks again, everybody, and thanks again, Ellen. Bye.
Bye-bye.